Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Stephanie L. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. Today is Wednesday, June 5th, 2024, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are on page 23, reading the third full paragraph, beginning with How True This Is, ending with Assert His Power of Will. We are reading and commenting on this one paragraph this morning. Today's readers are Chanel T., who will be reading the text, Shelley E., reading page 164, and Kara L. is our backup reader today. We have a newcomer greeter, and announcements will be Jody E. The reference ID number for yesterday, Tuesday, June 4, 2024, is 21,458 or 21458, and today's 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,464 or 21464. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from eating and compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I will now ask Laura H. to please read the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. And Laura, you need to hit star one to unmute, please. Laura H., are you there?
Good morning. This is Laura H. from Washington State. I thought I was on mute. Here are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And thank you for letting me be of service.
Well, thank you so much, Laura H., and I'll now ask Jim C. to please read the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous.
Hi, good morning. Jim C., recovering in New York. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Number two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscious. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. And number 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for the opportunity to serve.
Oh, thank you so much, Jim C. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you please keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to remute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are on page 23, the third paragraph, beginning with how true this is, through one paragraph, ending with assert his power of will. We are going to read and comment on just that one paragraph this morning. And I will now ask Chanel T. to begin reading.
Thank you, Stephanie. Hi, I'm Chanel T. in Washington State. I'm a grateful compulsive eater. I get to live in recovery today by the grace of God. How true this is, few families and friends sense that these drinkers are abnormal, but everybody hopefully awaits the day when the sufferer will rouse himself from his lethargy and assert his power of will. It harkens back to the previous paragraph a little bit about once this malady has a real hold, they are a baffled lot. I am of the baffled lot, untreated, no question. And absolutely, even though it did not show in my body until both my parents had passed away in my 20s. It didn't show externally, but my parents sensed there was something abnormal in me to the point that they decided I was using drugs. When I was in high school, I was not. I wasn't drinking. I wasn't using drugs. I was using food lethargy, right? What does lethargy mean? Let me read that really quick because I looked it up. I think it's really important. One of the meanings, the quality or state of being lazy, sluggish. Well, as an addict, I don't have a choice in the matter, right? I have an allergy of the body and a twist of the mind. I'm not actually indifferent about it. I've tried everything where it says, name some regimen. I've probably tried that. Exercise. Just anything that I could do, I did do. And it was to no avail. I am abnormal in the sense that I am an addict. You know what the good news is, though? I wish my parents were alive to see it because I know it would give them joy in their heart. The good news is that there is a way out daily, a daily reprieve by working these steps like my life depends on it. It works for anyone who does it, no matter how far down the scale of life we've gone. And I get to serve others. That's great news. I have sanity today. I have neutrality around food, and I get to have fellowship with you and know my higher power, God, like I never have. For that, I'm eternally grateful. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Wow, thank you so much, Chanel P. And we're now going to open the meeting for sharing. Although we value your experience, we ask that you please limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. If you shared on Monday or Tuesday on any vision meeting, please allow others the opportunity to share today. Please keep your share to 3 minutes to allow time for as many people as possible to share. I'll remind you with the time and when your time is up. So please give your first name, last initial, and where you're calling from, and who would like to share.
Please give me the page number and the paragraph again.
Yeah, we're on page 23. We're the third paragraph, beginning with how true this is, ending with assert his power of will. Laura W. in South Jersey. I've got you, Laura. Thank you.
Julie B. in Ohio.
I've got you, Julie.
Thank you.
Is there someone else who wanted to get in on that one besides Laura and Julie? I thought I heard another voice.
Yes, I'd like to today, Larry G.
Okay, got you, Larry G.
Donna B.
I've got you, Donna B. Colorado, right? I'll wait until it's okay. All right, anyone else? All right, we'll start here. I've got Laura W., Julie B., Larry G., Donna B. Laura, you're up first, followed by Julie B.
Thanks, Stephanie. Good morning, everyone. It's Laura W., recovered compulsive eater, anorexic and exercise bulimic in South Jersey. How true this is. How true what is? Well, how true it is that there's that obsession that some douse. Somebody's unmuted, sorry. We will beat the game. And boy, did I think that I could beat the game. You know, I wanted to stay skinny, but I didn't want the consequences that came along with it. I was spiritually bankrupt. I didn't realize that I didn't have control. You know, I grew up in a home where I was told, if you put your mind to something, you can do it. And in so many ways, that's a great thing for parents to teach their kids. But in so many other ways, it was killing me because I felt like a failure. Why could I not stop, you know, over-exercising? Why could I not stop restricting? And, you know, I feel that my family and friends did feel that somehow, someday, that I would, you know, get it together and I'll rouse myself. And I wasn't lazy at all. I was constantly out running or this or that. And I would, but my will, you know, they didn't understand. Laura, if you're hungry, you eat. If you're not hungry, you don't eat. It's simple math. And, you know, my math wasn't math, and it was in total denial. And denial is what keeps us in our disease, and the truth is what keeps me in recovery. And today I know for a fact that I am powerless over certain foods and over certain substances and over certain behaviors. Most of all, I know that I'm powerless over people and what they do and what they don't do. And it doesn't matter how long I'm abstinent. It doesn't matter how long I'm in recovery. I do know that one slip, one BLT, bite, lick, or taste will develop into a relapse because I will kick off that phenomenon of craving of my alcoholic substance, and I will go down that rabbit hole. And I do have an allergy of the body. A lot of people don't believe in it or don't have it. And I have family members who don't believe in it. They don't believe that I have an allergy of the body. And that's okay. I just know that I am peaceful today. I'm peaceful among the chaos. I'm peaceful among other people around me that are addicts in my family. And I do know that nobody is awaiting the day when I will rouse myself and assert my power of will, because I am abstinent, living a recovered life, thanks be to God, one day at a time, thanks to the surrender that comes from working these steps. Thanks for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you for a W from New Jersey. Next up, we've got Julie B, followed by Larry G.
Hi, thank you, Stephanie. This is Julie B from Akron, Ohio, and just wanted to claim my seat. Thank you for your service. So this paragraph mentions family and friends, and I imagine myself and my family. And if you were to look at the entire family, like I look normal. I look normal among the obese people in my family, the people who turn to bowls and bowls of substances to satiate their pain. I look normal, you know, just against everyone because I, you know, used to exercise incessantly to rid myself of excess food. But internally and later on more physically, like I did gain, you know, I couldn't hide the evening binges anymore. I couldn't hide the compulsive overeating anymore. So within my family, I was always told, well, you look good. Like you look like you're the healthy one, you know, and now I am. Now I am the healthy one. I'm not ending every meal with something sweet and then going and leaving that meal and trying to get my fix somewhere else. This paragraph also mentions friends, and like my friends were my like eating buddies. Like that's what we did together. We skipped, like I'm my college friends, like we skipped class and would just go and eat. And, you know, not being able to basically have like time with them without focusing on the food. Like the food was in front of us, the appetizer, the whatever, and I was eating it. I'm an abnormal eater because I watch others eat things and leave a portion of it on their plate or only take a few slices of it. And I am not that kind of eater. If when I was in my fully in my disease, I would not be able to only eat a few slices of something. I would finish the entire thing. I would always think that somehow I was going to conquer this, that somehow for this event or for this wedding or a special occasion, I was going to get down miraculously and still be able to eat. And it just never happened for me until I was saved by this program and saved by the rooms and sponsorship and doing what the sponsor told me. That is something that I recommend to any newcomer, is just to do exactly what your sponsor is telling you. I'm so grateful for this program. I feel like a lucky person that was saved from an ocean, and I'm never leaving the boat that is OA, and I love you guys, and I'll pass. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Julie B. from Ohio. Next, we have Larry G., followed by Donna B.
Thank you, Stephanie. You're such a kind moderator. My name is Larry G. from California. Chanel T. killed it. Wow, what a great message. This really is emotional for me. The line down below, it says, everyone waits the day. Hopefully awaits the day. Hope is the bane of all evil. There is no hope until we surrender. I grew up the first 6 years, it was like Camelot. This is this Camelot family experience. And then my dad started drinking. My mom started eating. My dad died an alcoholic. He lived as a drunk. He died as a drunk at 70. My mom died as a compulsive eater, age 52. And there was collateral damage. I had tried everything I could do to help change that until I got into ACA, Adult Children's of Alcoholics, for 30 years. I got sober when I was 25. But I compulsively ate. I just was destroying myself, compulsively eating, and everyone waited a day until, you know, I something changed. And thank God that Rachel K. 12-step mean divisions, because the 20 years prior to that in OA, I was dying in those meetings. I was dying. And what I appreciate about a vision for you is that we have we model this program after the first 100, and we read every day out of this book, and this book has come alive for me. It's just absolutely come alive for me. And I have now can say that I am sober. My dad's alcoholism became my alcoholism. My mom's compulsive eating became mine. But now I'm in recovery, and I have hope because I work this program like a hair's in fire. And what happened is with Vision, what the greatest thing happened to me with Vision is that I took my Alcoholics Anonymous experience in sobriety, and I now have an AA-based OA recovery. It's black and white. It says in the big book that I can go on the bitter end and die from this disease, or I can surrender and recover. I mean, I love the fact that the big book is black and white. There's no gray areas. There's gray areas in all the other literature that I studied, and I was dying reading that literature, and I was dying in those meetings, and today I'm living. I have an extraordinary life, and extraordinary is defined as beyond the ordinary. And I thank all of you, and I hope that the new people, the newcomers on this meeting, who are frightened, scared like I was, that you just get off the sidelines and you get started. Just get started. Find a sponsor, anybody to talk to, and start working steps. And you can be recovered also. And with that, I pass.
Well, thank you so much, Larry G. from California. Donna B., you're up next.
Good morning. This is Donna B. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, binge purge bulimic, exercise bulimic, calling from Denver, Colorado. And my first name is spelled D-A-N-A. When I read this sentence about the sufferer will rouse himself from his lethargy and assert his power of will, I have this image in my head of being very, very sick in bed and using all my strength to just lift myself out of the bed and then somehow miraculously have the power to go about my life even without having had a remedy for whatever it was that was making me infirm to begin with. And I think that's sort of how I treated this disease of compulsive overeating is, every morning I woke up with a commitment to be different, to behave differently, to feel different, to just rouse myself from the lethargy of having this disease of compulsive overeating and somehow with my own power be able to assert some magic ability to no longer be a compulsive overeater. I think one of the first things that I learned in the rooms that resonated for me is that this is a disease. It is a disease that is deadly. It is a disease that I am powerless over. It is a disease that I can't just cure myself of because I want to. And that created an opportunity for me to have some compassion for myself, that I didn't have to wake up every morning hating myself for continuing to be the same person that I had always been. The other thing I learned is that there's a solution, and that solution was available to me, just as it had been available to others. And unlike pushing myself out of bed and forcing myself, to live a life or to be something that I'm not, this solution is more of a surrender, a letting go, and allowing the proverbial medicine of this program to work on my behalf. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Donna B. And if you just joined us, let me fill you in on where we're at. We're on page 23. We read the third full paragraph, beginning with how true this is, ending with assert his power of will. And we read and are commenting on just that one paragraph this morning. And who would like to share? Please give me your first name, last initial, and where you're calling from. Who would like to share on this paragraph?
Liz A., California.
Wendy M.
I've got you, Wendy.
Vanessa G.
I've got you, Vanessa G. Do you have anyone else? Okay, we'll go with this for now. I've got Liz A, Wendy M, Vanessa G. Liz, you're up first, followed by Wendy M.
Good morning. Thank you, Stephanie. Thank you for everyone doing service. My name is Liz A from Los Angeles. Gosh, you know, when I read this, when I see that word lethargy, for me it is so strong because I get depressed. I suffer from depression. It's just my condition. And on top of that, I have zero, you know, purpose, zero life when I'm in the food. There is no light at the end of the tunnel. There is no hope. I'm just a blob, you know, and I have absolutely no desire to live my life. And, you know, when I looked up the word enthusiasm, lethargy, it was telling me that it's a lack of enthusiasm. And then when I look up the word enthusiasm, it actually says that it originated, meaning inspired by God. And there's the key. I had no inspiration by God because I had no God in my life. And that was so, that was a hole in me. That's what that hole that craved everything was. And so for me today, the most important thing is to do my 11th step every morning, you know, to take my time and pray and listen to God and be inspired. Be inspired as to what He would have me do, or it, whatever you call your higher power, not what I want to do, because it gets to a point that I don't want to do anything. And so God inspires me to act my way into right thinking, and that makes all the difference for my recovery. And thank God I'm recovered for over a year today, and it's more than I've ever been recovered for. I was one of the constant relapsers, and it is such a gift from God. And I think with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lizzie, and congrats on having over a year. What a miracle. Next up, Wendy M., followed by Vanessa G. And Wendy, if you can hit star one to unmute, we can't hear you.
Okay, hi. sorry about that. Yeah, Wendy M., recovered in Boulder, Colorado. Grateful to be on the line. Stephanie, thank you so much for your service. Yeah, so I'll just start with the way I was observed by my family. I remember when I was, I don't know, in my 20s, my brother gave me a sweatshirt that said, "I put the fun in dysfunctional." And I laughed it off, right? Like, oh, maybe I can get some attention in this family if I'm dysfunctional, if I'm abnormal, right? I kind of encouraged it. And the thing that I always wanted to be with this family, probably with friends, is I want to be understood. I want you to get me, right? That's kind of an obsession of mine with my family. Even to this day, I'm going to see them at a family business conference, and I still want them to get me, if I'm honest. And, you know, that will probably never happen. I was having probably lunch or coffee with my sister, and she said, "Will you ever be able to eat from a basket of bread?" And then I wanted to take out the doctor's opinion and read it to her, right? Like, I just need you to get me. And here's the deal. I get me, right? I have this chip of a book that tells me who I am, what my problem is, and more importantly, what the solution is. And I get to live a life of freedom. I get to let go of, you know, them waiting for the day, you know, that I can assert my power of will. Here's the gift of the program. If you're new, listen up. It's not about asserting power of will. It was for probably all of us until we got into these rooms and opened up this book. But asserting my power of will, that's what I did my whole life, right? I had the illusion. I had the dishonest thought that I could. That if I just tried harder, I could fix this problem. And the minute I got into this room and realized there's nothing to fix, I just have to realize I have no power. Lack of power, that is our dilemma, right? We had to find a power greater than ourselves. It's that simple. And the miracle today is I've been doing this 23 years, and I finally understood and got and experienced today that power. I know that any problem I've got is not a problem because I have God. And I get it now in a way I never got it before. And knowing that gives me deep freedom. I'm going to see family members, right? I have a complete and utter freedom. Utter freedom. And I get to go to this. And just, yeah, I get to bring something to the occasion. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Wendy M. from Colorado. Next up, Vanessa G. And if you can please let us know where you're calling from.
Hi, everybody. My name is Vanessa G., and I am a compulsive overeater. Families and friends. Sense that I was abnormal. My mother took me to doctors when I was, you know, just a kid. And, the weight issue by itself, you know, made it pretty obvious that, you know, as a child, I had issues with eating too much. And, but, you know, there would be times when, you know, they would see me rouse myself, you know, assert my power of will and do something for some period of time. And lost it again, you know, in my 20s. And by the time I got really close to, my mid-20s, maybe around 26, 27, you know, I went over that 300-pound mark and went out and found a doctor-supervised diet and lost, you know, 175 pounds. And kept it off for a while. And family and friends, oh my gosh, I got the kudos for, you know, being such, you know, such a great example of willpower. And then it started, you know, the relapsing and the eating and the gaining the weight. And you know, I just remember, you know, people who hadn't seen me for a while, for a couple of years, seeing me and the look of shock on their face when I had gained 100 pounds, the look of, you know, approval when I had lost it again. In particular, you know, right there, you know, before the pandemic, I had gotten down to almost, you know, a normal weight. And because I had, quote unquote, found the perfect food plan. And then for maybe about just a few months, not even quite a year, I didn't see people in, you know, this particular class that I was going to. And when I showed up afterwards, there was this look in their face like, you know, they didn't even recognize me. My family often talked about, you know, how, you know, you've done it once, you can do it again. You did it for that, you know, you've done it. You've done it more than once, you can do it again. But the truth is that I did know, you know, by the end of, you know, that period of time, by, you know, shortly before I found this meeting, that I was down for the count and I was lethargic. I had just given up. You know, it wasn't going to happen for me. No matter how many OA meetings I went to, no matter how many different food plans I tried, no matter how much I tried to emulate my sponsor, I just had decided that, you know, God didn't want it for me. And things changed. Things changed when a friend of mine reached out, told me to get on the line and listen to a big book study, this particular meeting. And not just did things change, my life changed. All
Vanessa,
of a sudden,
that's time.
Thank you. And I'm so grateful.
Can you
grateful
let us know
where
you're calling from? Sorry.
I'm sorry. Thank you for letting me share. I'm calling from New Mexico.
Thank you so much. Sorry to cut you off there. I hate doing that. So now we can take another lineup. Please let us know your first name, last initial, and where you're calling from. Who would like to share?
Christine B., California.
That, yeah, was that a Christine B.? B as in boy?
That's correct. B like boy.
All right. Awesome. Thank you.
Bev M. from Wisconsin.
Was that Bev?
Yes.
Okay. Got you, Bev. And we can probably take two more.
Jackie from Michigan.
All right, Jackie, got you.
Barbara A., California.
All right, Barbara. Okay, I've got Christine B., Bev M., Jackie, and Barbara A. Start with Christine B., followed by Bev M.
Hi, Christine B., compulsive overeater from Oxnard, California. I locked on to what one of the previous sharers said. It was abnormal. I looked normal in an obese family until I no longer looked normal. But that was the only thing normal about me was my size. Everything, and I mean everything else, was not. I still obsessed over food and did lots of weird things to try to keep the weight off. But even without food, everything else about me, and even as I say it right now, just feels in my body abnormal. Like my before program, it was just my handling of life and feelings that it brought about was totally bizarre, and I had lots of weird coping mechanisms, and a lot of shame about those actions, my lack of maturity, my lack of accountability. It was just so much overhauling, and for so long I just was so unaware. It's funny, even within my obese family, I would have been seen as the abnormal one in terms of my conduct, and they weren't wrong in seeing me that way. I don't think they saw themselves as abnormal, which I think is interesting and possibly kind of enviable. The only person that ever saw anything was that sensed that they were abnormal was my mother, who wound up going to OA, who unfortunately passed. And I think she, for some reason, and I wish we'd had a better connection during her time, because I got the impression that she only sensed the abnormal in food. But I know, at least for myself, the abnormal was so much greater than my food. The food was just the last thing to go down. And that's actually what got me to OA, was just everything starting to fall apart. And I'm so grateful that it happened so I could find OA. And that was back in January. And really became apparent to me, it was my lack of a spiritual connection that needed to be addressed. And with my new spiritual connection and the generosity of past and fellow OA fellows, I feel like I'm getting closer to normal. And with that, I thank you all so much. Wish you nothing but success, and I pass.
Oh, thank you so much, Christine B. from California. Next up, Bev M., followed by Jackie.
Hi, this is Bev M. from Wisconsin, compulsive overeater recovering for today. I'm really nervous about sharing. This is my first time but I am so grateful. I just want to thank all of you who get on the line and take recovery calls and share your experience, strength, and hope, because you're helping me live this in my life, and I'm very grateful. Thanks. With that, I pass.
Well, thank you so much, Bev M. from Wisconsin. Next up, we've got Jackie, followed by Barbara A. And Jackie, if you could hit star one to unmute.
Hello, here I am. I'm Jackie, compulsive overeater, and I'm from Northern Michigan. Just looking at this paragraph. Abnormal. Certainly, my eating is abnormal, but I'm coughing. Sorry, but I would pretend in front of family and friends. And then compulsively eat by myself. And I tried every diet. For a long time, I would exercise. I don't know if it's, well, for example, in my family, I often hear, well, moderation and just take a little bit. And I have a sister who decided she was going to be my my sponsor, which is just ridiculous. So, you know, sitting here today, I think that I don't need to defend myself. I don't need to defend my program. All I need to do is work it. You know, family members don't understand the meetings. And you know what? They don't have to. I understand it. And God understands it. And, willpower, I don't have it, so I can only live by the directions in the book, in the big book, and take the action and being willing. And that's all for me. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much, Jackie from Michigan. Next up, we have Barbara A.
Good morning, moderator. Thank you. Thank you for this meeting. Thank you for everyone who shared. My name is Barbara A. from California. Just so grateful that this meeting is here, that I can call every morning and listen and have support and have encouragement and know that, I am a compulsive overeater. I have been so full of judgment lately, and I realize that judgment is an assertion of my power of will. I want things to be a certain way. And this handing over of my judgments, really just love people just for who they are, not wanting to change them. That's the program. Examining my motives. There's so much that I get from listening to this meeting. And to the earlier meetings, and to the meetings that have sprung from this meeting, that show me, yes, I am a compulsive overeater. Yes, I have a disease, and there is a solution, praise the Lord, who I call my higher power, that there is a solution today that I can take. And when I am feeling judgmental, angry, selfish, dishonest, self-centered, angry, I can come to this meeting And I may have those feelings and they dissipate because I listen to people who are just the opposite of that. They're honest. They're not angry. They're grateful. They're loving. They're kind. This group has what I want. That's why I come and listen to it. Asserting my self-will got me to over 250 pounds. Handing it over to God is giving me recovery and this program. And I just wanted to share and say thank you. It's been a while since I've shared, and I'm so grateful to listen to this meeting. I hope you all have a wonderful day. And I pass.
Well, thank you so much, Barbara A. from California. We've got time for one more share. Who would like to close us out? 3 minutes. Who would like to share?
Reuben H. Israel. Reuben H. Israel.
Was that Reuben H.?
Yep.
All right, Reuben, you're up.
All right, thank you, thank you. I have a cold, excuse me, my voice. Well, this is a beautiful paragraph. I really relate. I want to preface it by saying that it comes right after the last couple of paragraphs about taking the first drink and just the idea of not knowing the truth. Why taking this drink when the malady, it's being baffled. And it's coming after the idea that it's an obsession. And I marked in my book that it's a major point, that it's an obsession. That it's like, come on already, you know, get off it already. It's like, but I can't get off it. It's an obsession. So I just recognized some connections with this current paragraph that family and friends, we're thinking the person is abnormal, but it's in a vague way. It was very vague for me about my family recognizing my problem, and they still don't really understand it. And what really is important for me to recognize is that as my family has this vague sense, doesn't really understand, I have had a vague. I just took that on personally for my own being and taking it on for my environment and my family that I grew up with. I mean, look, there was a celebration that my father could go to a hot dog stand and almost eat 20 hot dogs in an hour. But he couldn't get that 20 with one because he said that the Coke interfered with his, if he hadn't drank the Coke, he would have been able to do the 20. So, you know, it was an acknowledgement in my family. But then it becomes something which is not an acknowledgement. It's like, why won't he stop? And I'm experiencing that with my family. I did experience that at certain times and at myself many times. And I can see that with the family members, in particular my family, it's my daughter, and it's the obsession. Why can't they change? Why can't I change? And for me, I did not give up hope. I kept praying for the time. And, you know, things work in God's time, not in my time. I don't control that. Just like that, and there is this other side of it which just says, well, maybe God's time is now. Maybe it is now. So I don't know. I'm not God. And I acknowledge that God exists. I acknowledge that He has blessed me with my understanding now. That I can't take right. And afterwards, if I don't follow the rest of the steps, I'm doomed. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for closing this out, Reuben H. from Israel. We'll now close the meeting with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Excuse me, Serenity Prayer. And Shelley E., can you please read a vision for you?
You bet. You bet. Thanks for your service. I'm Shelley E., a gracefully recovered compulsive overeater in Arlington, Texas. The Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But I cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you for letting me do service, and I pass.